Welcome to Busting Walls, a Pennsylvania Department of Corrections podcast, where we break through the walls and fences of our facilities to provide listeners with a real look inside the field of corrections with one of the nation's top DOCs. And here's your host of Busting Walls, DOC Secretary John Wetzel.
And we are back again here at Busting Walls, and we have a new employee to the department, but certainly not to the field of corrections. And we have with us our Career Pathways Program Manager, Dorinda Hammerlin. Did I get that name right?
Dorinda, yep.
Yep. So welcome to Busting Walls.
Thank you.
And we're really excited to have you both in the department and certainly in this new position and on this podcast. But let's start by talking about how you ended up in Pennsylvania. You came a long way to take this job, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I came from California, not California, Pennsylvania, the state of California.
The other California,
the
we call that here.
California. Yeah. Yeah, I am born and raised in California, but raised by a Pittsburgh mom.
Oh, okay.
My mom is from south of Pittsburgh. All of her family's from there. But no, I've been in California. I started with a Department of Corrections just as an office assistant in a parole office when I was 21.
And what part of California was that?
Northern California. I started in Stockton, so south of Sacramento, but it's around the Sacramento area. And started there and worked my way through, did some accounting, did inmate appeals, third level inmate appeals, a little bit in the parole office. Left corrections after about 9 years. For a couple years, and then came back and worked in the California Prison Industry Authority for almost 9 years. Absolutely loved it. I likened that to the positive side of corrections. It was more that reentry piece that I never got to see in my previous experience in corrections.
So you have experience both in parole and corrections.
Yes.
Wow. And so talk about what the industry's program out there was like.
You know, Department of Corrections went from a change years ago from California Department of Corrections to California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. I was fortunate to be a part of that when that was coming around. And I didn't really get to see a lot of that rehabilitation side until the last few years. I saw Department of Corrections really broadening, and reentry was the big buzzword around. Working for CalPIA, that is what we did. That was our focus. CalPIA is separate from Department of Corrections, self-funded, but the Secretary of Corrections oversaw the board. So that is how we tied in, other than working in the factories and hiring corrections inmates. But what we did is we were giving them the certifications, the job skills that they need, soft skills, and the certifications to hopefully get them jobs when they get out. So that was really the rehabilitative side. PIA had, the recidivism rate was less. We were able to offer them additional certifications, over 120 certifications, nationally accredited certifications.
So like what kind of certifications do you guys offer out there?
We did the ABO, American Board of Optionary, which I know the Pennsylvania does.
That's like Cambridge Springs here.
Cambridge Springs, absolutely, at the optical. That's a wonderful job guaranteed program and certification. We would do ServSafe. We did a customer service. Over 100 just from TPC training systems alone, from troubleshooting skills.
What's TPC?
TPC doesn't actually stand for anything.
I feel like we have a bunch of acronyms that don't stand for anything either.
So. I think Corrections Universal just speaks in acronyms. And TPC plays into that, but it doesn't actually stand for anything. It's just the name of the company. And we would do many, you know, like I said, troubleshooting, working with small hand tools, things that you wouldn't really think, working mathematics in the workplace. The fabric factories, you know, they have to measure out fabric. That's using math. So those little job skills that you can actually turn into certifications, which would help them. Linen, laundry, you know, ALM certification. So we had egg certifications because we would grade the eggs that we would purchase.
Oh.
So they had an egg production. We used to have the chickens. And then they got rid of the chickens, so now they just buy the eggs and they grade them. Meat, dairy farms, they had two dairies. So
all that came under industries in California.
All of that came under industries in California, and there were certifications with the California Department of Food and Ag. They were coming in and certifying. So it was great programs. I mean, there were parameters around it because the goal was to get them certified and have a certification that's valid for when they get out to help them get a job, because they already have that barrier of having to check that box,
right?
You know, that I'm a convicted felon. Well, what better way to help get over that hurdle than to have a valid certification already on file? And one example I used to always tell inmates when I would go out and talk to them, food handler from the National Restaurant Association. Amazing. You go down, you just mentioned you were in Seattle, you know, you go to a bunch of different food industries. Everywhere you go, every employee in that food industry has a food handler certification. It's required. So PIA requires all inmates that work with food, even the finished products, so even if they're in the warehouse, to have a food handler certification. It's good for 3 years. So if they get out within that 3 years, that is still a valid certification. They can get out and go immediately to McDonald's down the street, and they have a leg up on anyone just coming in without that, because now the employer doesn't have to pay for it. They know they've already used that certification. So that kind of helps get over that check that they made in that box.
Wow. So it sounds a lot like a more focused workforce development almost approach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's also a business, you know, so there's profits and production driven, but they are really focused. The big thing that the general manager, I'll give a shout out, you know, Chuck Patillo, you know, his biggest thing.
Shout out to Chuck.
Shout out to Chuck. The biggest thing that he always says is the number one product of PIA is an offender that leaves and never returns. That is the number one product. It's not license plates. It's not, you know, how many eggs we can grade. It's an inmate that leaves and doesn't return to prison. That is truly the number one product. That is everyone's goal.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome focus and approach. And how did you hear about Pennsylvania Department of Corrections and this opportunity? I mean, we're a long way from California.
I am. So I was visiting, as I said, I have family in Pennsylvania. I've been coming and visiting some summers since I was a kid, and I was here last summer. And on vacation, I decided that I wanted to see what correctional industries did in Pennsylvania so I could go back to my office, because I was the manager of the industry employment program there that did all the certifications and reentry piece. I wanted to see what Pennsylvania was doing while I was on vacation and what I could take back to California. So I visited SCI Fayette and Somerset while I was on vacation here. And visited.
You're definitely a corrections person.
I know. It's awful.
Every corrections person listening right now is like, yeah, it makes perfect sense to go check out some prisons while I'm vacationing.
That's exactly what everybody said to me. They said, well, shouldn't you be doing something else? And I said, well, you know, why not? Have the opportunity to do it. And I wanted to be able to take something from here and see what I could do back there. And then also share with what California is doing with Pennsylvania. And in that process, I met some people, had nothing to do with me applying for the job. It actually came through NCIA, the National Correctional Industry Association, sends out job notices, job opportunities, and that came through my email one day, this job, and I read it, and I said, well, it's pretty much what I'm doing in California. I have family in Pennsylvania. It's a good opportunity. Why not try it? And so I put my application in, never expecting to hear, and it was a few months, and had an interview in December 16th, and I started February 21st.
That's quite a whirlwind.
Yes, it is.
And I tell you, it was a really great opportunity for the department. We got, I believe it was $1 million grant.
It is. It's a 3-year $1 million grant with Department of Education. It's for the Improved Reentry Education Grant.
And the position that you got was super competitive. Like, hundreds of applicants, and all you had to do was say that you went on vacation and toured two of our prisons, and I would have hired you. But, you know, it's such a cool opportunity and such a cool notion of getting the U.S. Department of Ed to recognize the importance of providing marketable job skills and living skills for individuals coming out of our system. So, talk about the grant and what you see as the opportunity for the department
Sure. Well, the overall goal for it is to build sustainable, industry-driven career pathways that'll help prepare inmates with in-demand skills while they're incarcerated, and then to connect them to jobs, support services, and ongoing education upon release. And we want to make sure that Department of Corrections is a credible partner in the workforce system. That's a big piece of it. We want to be credible with what we're doing. And what we're looking to do is we want to improve alignment based on the labor market needs and align education and workforce programs offered inside and outside. So a great example is working with companies and industries, asking them, what are you looking for in an entry-level position? What certification, what skills do you want? And to make sure that we're aligning that with our training that we're providing the inmates inside.
So that's the part you're talking about when you say industry driven. So
yes.
So another way to think of this, or when you say that, how I think of this is actually meeting with employers and because we're such a big state, you're almost talking about meeting with employers by region to
yes.
understand what their workforce needs are. Is that what you're
yes.
how you're envisioning this?
Yes, we are actually working with the workforce investment boards throughout the state. We have three targeted ones right now as part of our pilot. We have Pittsburgh, South Central, PA, and Lehigh Valley are our three targeted WIBs that we're working with.
And a WIB is a
workforce investment board. And then within that, we have three pilot, if you would, industries that we're targeting on. Construction, which is in Pittsburgh, we're focusing on construction. South Central PA, we're focusing on manufacturing. And in Lehigh Valley is transportation and logistics. So we're
like warehousing, is that?
Warehousing and so forth. And so what we want to do is make sure that we're meeting those needs. We don't want to provide education or skills, you know, training to inmates that are not going to be relevant to them on the outside. And so that's what we're doing, is making changes that we need. And we're really taking it from the beginning, from intake, classification, education, all the way through to transitional housing, inmate employment. You know, if we train an inmate in vocation, the great thing is that we want to make sure that we're getting, for lack of a better term, the right butts in the right seats. You know, that whatever job is going to help build on their interests. If you have a guy right now that comes in and says, you know, hey, I'm going to get a job as an HVAC. I use HVAC a lot as the example. I've got a buddy that's going to get me a job working in HVAC when I get out. That's great, but he has no idea really what that means. He goes through our HVAC vocational program. He gets that certification and doesn't really do anything in HVAC while he's incarcerated, and then he gets out and then shows up on the job first day, and the first thing he says is, well, I'm afraid of heights. You want me to get up where? You know, that's not going to work. So we need to make sure that before we even train them in a vocation, let's make sure we're training them in a vocation that's going to interest them, that they know what that job entails. So we have a new, we're working with education, BCE right now, and we're redeveloping the pre-vocational curriculum. It's called Pathway to Success. And we're redeveloping that into 11 modules. And we're really using the interest profiler as the first interest assessment, as the first path before they even get into a vocational program. What interests them? And make sure that we get them in the right program.
That's awesome. So what it sounds like you're trying to do, and you're talking about at intake, or early on in the process. It sounds like you're trying to assess what the aptitude of the individual coming through our system has, what their interests are, so we know what they want to do, and then what they're capable of doing,
and what they're willing to do.
And willing is another aspect of it. But then I think what sounds really unique to me is then you're actually looking at, okay, what jobs can you actually get if you're going back to the Lehigh Valley?
Absolutely. And not only that, once they get that certification, we're also pulling in, we're not leaving it at just education, we're pulling in correctional industries, and we're also pulling in inmate employment to work with education, that when an inmate gets out of that vocational program, we'll use HVAC still as the example, they complete that program, let's get that inmate on the maintenance crew in that prison to now put those skills to work. Make sure that they really like that height and that they can do it, and they're getting that work experience. The biggest thing that we're hearing from companies on the outside is willing to work, willing to do the job they're hired for, and having work experience. It's the same as somebody that gets out of college, and just because they have a degree doesn't mean they're going to get a job immediately in what they got that degree in. They need some sort of work experience to help with that. So while they're incarcerated, we want to help them with that. They've got the degree, for lack of a better term. They've got the certification. Now let's put them to work using that certification that now they can add on their resume, so when they get out, they can show that work experience that they've had for a couple of years.
So that really sounds like something very ungovernment-like.
Yes.
Where you're going to like look across our entire enterprise or entire agency and really get better coordination, like between education and work opportunities within the facilities. But then even when you talk about factoring in like the transitional housing units and transitioning, and then you're talking about workforce on the outside, how is that possible in 3 years? I mean, $1 million sounds like a lot of money, but...
And we're actually in year two right now. So there's been
so we're down left. To 600 grand.
Exactly. You know, a lot of work, like I said, I started February 21st. And I just hit the road running. We have a lot of ideas, and it's really just making sure that everybody is on the same plan and they know. Bringing everybody together was the biggest thing. Because we don't just want to focus on one piece of this puzzle, which is education and the vocation piece. Because we can do whatever we want with that, but without talking to everybody across the board, we're not going to be successful. So it really is bringing everybody together with a meeting of the minds, which is exactly what we did. We include parole. We've included the career links, the workforce investment boards, the transitional housing units, the VSUs, inmate employment, education, the unit managers. We have really included everybody in all of these discussions. And we have a really nice flow chart of the pie in the sky dream of what we want to see. And what we're asking them all to do is find your place in this flowchart, and what can we do to help you serve your population as you're part of this flowchart.
So if our listeners want to check out the flowchart, is it on our website?
You know what? I don't think it is right now. I think that it's still in a draft form, but we will get it finalized.
And yeah, that would be awesome. We'll definitely get that over there. Because it sounds like that's, you've developed like this blueprint.
We have,
of
exactly.
How things... should work, and at least that's a great goal. I tell you, the other thing that I find very fascinating is your engagement with the private sector and your engagement with when you talk about manufacturing and you talk about construction in Pittsburgh and you talk about logistics or warehousing in the Lehigh Valley. I was at a employer roundtable in D.C. a couple weeks ago where big national employers are engaging corrections departments because of the aging out of the manufacturing skills. So
yes.
What they said, and what I'm hearing from you, and maybe you can affirm this, is that there's a real market for people, even for people coming out of prison, there's a real job market available. And that if we're able to align what we offer with what they need, it may be a real opportunity for us. Am I reading that right?
You are absolutely correct. Construction, so we have a consultant we're working with who's reaching out to those various, the pilot industries. And the first one that we've got a preliminary report on is the construction, and that was in Pittsburgh. And I think they did 3 or 5 companies and spoke with them about what are they looking for. And the biggest thing really is willingness to work, because they've got an abundance of work. And as you said, aging out, they're not gonna be able to fill all of their vacancies. They're not getting enough people willing to come in and do the job. And that's why I said making sure that they understand what the job is. They're getting people that come in. They're coming and going nonstop. And they're just not retaining. Their retention is not well. And the biggest thing is they said people show up on the job day one. They're like, I have to work in the sun. I got to get dirty. And understanding, getting them to understand that, this is what this job entails. And that's where the construction specifically that we've heard from so far is just really getting them to understand what this job means.
Yeah, I tell you, it's a really cool alignment. You know, here we are in 2017, and who would think that folks coming through prison really have an opportunity to augment the workforce?
And, absolutely.
You know, I think most systems would love to see people who are couched as tax burdens become taxpayers.
Yes.
And productive citizens. And I think what we heard from the employers down in D.C. was that oftentimes folks come out of our system are better, more motivated, more engaged employees. Are you hearing the same?
Yes. Yes. You know, in my experience, having that structure while they're incarcerated, it's those soft skills that they're looking for too, showing up on time. And as long as, you know, DOC here is adhering to that and across the board, you know, even if they're incarcerated, still, you know, having them make sure that they show up to work on time. They can work with others. They can work well with a diverse group of people, whether it's different sex, different gender, sex, race. It doesn't matter. Being able to have that diversity that a lot of people don't have if they haven't been incarcerated, and having that structure, that they get great employees from corrections that have that structure and have that, you know, they've been through the ringer, if you would. You know, they've been held to these standards that they need to keep while they're incarcerated.
Yeah, and I tell you, I need you to write my resume, because you just described like living in prison as building this skill set that's going to make you a spectacular employee. So when I'm ready to update my resume, please, I'm totally.
You know what? What's really interesting is you mentioned resumes. That was one of the pieces that I haven't mentioned in this flowchart is we're working really closely right now with the LNI, Labor and Industry, and they have Job Gateway that on the outside, you know, people can tap into and they can create a resume. And what we're working with them on is hoping to somehow find a way that our inmates in the transitional housing units can get logged in to that and have their resume already updated and ready, so when they get out, they can go right to a career link and start looking for jobs day one.
Wow.
And part of that job gateway is they can look for jobs while they're incarcerated. They just won't be able to apply for jobs, but they can at least use that time. They can save jobs, so when they get out, it'll be on there. So we're working with RIT, we're working with LNI, we're working with CareerLink, we're working with everybody. That's part of that external piece. And we would love that, you know, because if anybody goes into a CareerLink, if anybody's done that, first thing they do, they immediately sit you down to a computer and sign into Job Gateway and start creating your resume. That's the very first thing they do for anything. So we want to kind of eliminate that and say, well, they already have that, so now what else can you help them with? And they can already start looking for jobs immediately.
Yeah, and when we streamline the path from someone coming out of a prison into employment, we also make them more likely to be productive.
Absolutely.
and hopefully less likely to come back. But beyond that, we talk about fines, costs. We talk about restitution for victims. When folks come out of prison and get gainfully and sustainably employed,
absolutely,
it's a win for everybody.
It is. Another quote, if you would, from it was a director in California, and I loved her quote, and I always used it everywhere I went, is today's inmate is tomorrow's neighbor. You know, and if you think about it that way, you want them to succeed. Now, not everybody's got that, you know, rose-colored glasses on,
right,
thinking that everybody's going to do great when they come out of prison. That isn't true for everybody. It really is, you know, challenging sometimes but you've got to get those ones that are willing to work and do it. And that's who we're focusing on. Those that are actually, that's what this new pre-vote class, the Pathway to Success, is going to do. That if somebody is willing to sit through those 60 hours of that pre-vote, and when they get done, they have created a resume, they've created a career path for themselves, and they know what interests them. If they've sat through that, then you know what? They're going to probably be
well. That's
successful.
That's a level of motivation.
Absolutely.
It's showing you know, enough stick-to-itiveness, if
yes,
you will, to get through a course that they don't necessarily,
yes,
have to take. Really cool. And unless, you know, and perhaps we have some employers listening, and I think, you know, you're from California. I was recently heard of Uber doing,
yes,
a study in California where they looked at, when California passed, what was it, Proposition?
Which one?
The one that took the crimes that used to be felonies and made a bunch of them misdemeanors.
The
proposition in California that took.
Yes, AB 109.
Right.
I think it was AB
109. 109 that made crimes that were previously felonies, made them misdemeanors. Uber in California changed their background check requirements to now allow those folks in. and they found something that's pretty remarkable, and that's that people with a criminal record got a higher rating. And an Uber, you know, you get out Uber, you rate them between 0 and 5. A higher rating, people with a criminal record, than their average driver. So when people hear, oh, people come out of prison, you know, when we find the right people and motivated and people who want to change their lives and change the lives of their families, because there's a lot more at stake than just the inmates.
Absolutely.
I think you can make an argument, either from a fiscal standpoint or a humanistic standpoint, we have a responsibility to try to get that right.
You do. We really do. And having the employers, and if employers are listening, you know, there's great benefits to hiring, you know, reentrants. There's tax benefits, bonding. You know, there's a number of benefits. Just give them a chance. You know, you would be amazed at the type of employee that you will get from a reentrant.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we're going to release between 18 and 20,000 people this year. I don't think either of us are saying we're the reference for 18,000.
Absolutely.
But
not.
There's folks who align with what organizations are looking for, who have the skill set and the personality, and they're the kind of people that can make their companies better companies.
Yes, definitely. And I always encourage employers, you know, just give them that chance to show them what this reentrant can do for them. You would be amazed at a lot of determination, because they need this job. As you mentioned, you know, there's fines, there's restitution, they've got family. They already have all these other barriers in the way, and just giving them that opportunity to have that job, you know what? They want to keep that job.
Plus, if someone's on parole, we're going to know that they're more likely to be sober because somebody's drug testing them. And again, I guess we're talking very strength-based, but, you know, there's some benefits to having somebody who's going to have that extra level of supervision by our parole staff here.
Well, and if they're on parole, they have to have a job. So you know you're going to retain them, at least for the duration of their parole, because they need to be, you know, they have to be employed. And as you said, you know, they're going to be managed, they're going to be watched, they're going to be tested. There's definitely that benefit. You've got bonding, you know, tax credits. Sometimes you can get their wages, you know, reimbursed to you. So there's a number of benefits. And if they're not familiar with that, I urge employers to look into that.
And plus, we also have the flexibility that if there's a need in a certain area, like let's say Pittsburgh needs residential carpenters, we have the ability and we have the skills set in our staff that we can train people, or at least begin the training to become a carpenter. So we can be that with enough jobs in any area of Pennsylvania. We have prisons all over the place, and we have inmates who come from literally every county in the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. So we have the opportunity for employers to say, hey, we really need some pipe fitters in, let's say, Erie. We need pipe fitters. And it sounds like from the vehicle you're building, we can be flexible enough to develop that kind of training in here and have a real connection to the industry. Is that?
That is exactly right. We heard from some welding, I think it was a welding instructor, that heard from an employer that the welding that they're teaching right now is great, but they need this other piece of the welding in order to really get that entry level. So, okay, well, let's look at that. What additional courses, what do we need to change so it makes them more marketable? That's what we want to do. We want to make a marketable reentrant when they get out and to benefit them. Absolutely. And what's nice is, you know, we talked about optical up in Cambridge Springs. You know, there's employers that contact the staff up there. They're employing inmates right out the gate.
I was up there and actually saw an inmate who was getting ready to do a phone interview.
They do. That's what I was going to say. They do phone interviews with the employers. The employers never in person meet them until like day one of the job.
Yeah. What a cool, who would have thought that, right?
And we have so many industries like that, and vocational opportunities in DOC here that we can do that with a number of employers. If they are interested, just reach out to DOC and we can loop them into the right. We have welding, you know, carpentry, as you said, you know, we've got HVAC.
We have over 90 different vocational offerings.
Yes. So there's facilities maintenance, you know, custodial maintenance is huge right now. If you go to any hotel, you know, you were just traveling. I was traveling for the last 2 weeks. Hotel, they all have a need for that. And there's really not a lot of entry skill needed for that. And we're certifying them. They're getting certifications from that TPC that I mentioned. There's a whole custodial maintenance series that they're getting certified in.
Oh, that's awesome. So before I let you out of here, I got to hear. So give us your initial impressions of the department and the staff. And
oh, I'm on the hot seat. No, you know what? I absolutely love it. It's everybody is so genuine and nice and definitely reentry driven. That's, you know, coming from, you know, corrections where it's just a change. There's a change shifting in Department of Corrections. I started almost 20 years ago. And that change is shifting from just institutionalizing them. And coming here at this point in time where this is so reentry driven is nice. It's nice to see that that side of corrections. I always liken it to it's the positive side of corrections. We want to do something positive and to help them because not everybody in there is going to get out and immediately reoffend. You know, we want them to succeed. Yep. So honestly, everybody here has been fabulous, so welcoming, so nice. I was temporarily on another part of the building for the first 2 months and they were very welcoming. And then now that I'm in my permanent spot over here on this half of the building, everybody here this week has been very welcoming here. And I've been out to, I think, 9 SCIs in 2 months. And everybody is just genuinely wanting to help. They want to help reentrants succeed.
Well, that's awesome. And the work you're doing, I mean, this is such a great idea to try to coordinate all these existing services we have and maximize that. But the thing here that's so unique is really asking questions of industry at what their needs are and then having us try to align with the community. It's just a brilliant approach, and I certainly appreciate you and the work you're doing. And this is a great opportunity for the department. And to think that the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections got $1 million from the U.S. Department of Ed to do this, it's just pretty amazing.
And I'm appreciative. Thank you for hiring me. I'm very happy, and I love what I do here.
All right. Did we miss anything? Any final statement you want to make?
You know what? I don't think so. Just, you know, I love my California family out there, and, you know, Prison Industry Authority, keep rocking it. But, you know, I love what I do, and I love the opportunity here. I really am excited to see what how this grant plays out.
Yep. So look for her. She's been to 9 facilities.
I have.
A bunch more to go.
Yes.
So, you know, any ideas you have, feel free. We're going to try to get that Pathways thing up on the website.
Yes, I will.
And input will be great. You know, our website, if you're coming from the outside, is simply www.cor.pa.gov. Or as I like to say, you can Google us. So we're going to wrap up Bustin' Walls. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next week.